Good evening, everybody. Friday night, December 11th. 2 weeks away from Christmas. I want to welcome everybody to the Don Tony Show. I am Don Tony, as always. Much love to all of you out there. Live, archive, doesn't matter. Donzilla Army getting bigger and better by the day. Yeah, I had to pay a little tribute. Captain Lou. Something tells me the first words out of Pat Patterson's mouth when he got to the pearly gates. Oh, it's the fat slob. Oh, man. You know what? I can't take credit for this one. I actually had done a Patreon contest recently, and someone got a runner-up prize. And he said to me, he goes, I want the vintage Captain Lou shirt. And I said, the caricature? And he said, yeah. I said, I don't even know if they have it. I did a little searching, found it. I had to pick one up for myself. So, Captain Lou, you know, he was a fat slob. I mean, you go back and you watch him as a manager, it was pretty funny because he'd come out with flip-flops, not because it was like a Samoan tradition or anything, but he was lazy. It made him feel comfortable. How many times did Snuka or somebody just punch him in the head and he wouldn't take a bump? He would, am I kidding? For the older people out there, when Lou Albano led in the latter years, when he would take a shot, he would just do this and he would just walk away. You'd punch him and he'd just turn around and walk away. It was the funniest thing, man. So anyway, how you all doing tonight? Here in the United States, I heard, I think a short while ago this evening, that they approved the vaccine to be distributed across the country. And I can't wait, man. If I could get it done, I am getting it done now. Yeah, I know, you know, there's been a few people have had a couple of side effects, you know. I know it hits Jim Ross extra personal because of the bouts that he had about Bell's palsy. So he made a big deal about it as well. But, you know, there's nothing in this world. We're human beings. Our bodies are not perfect. And there's always going to be some people that are going to have allergic reactions. Some people are going to have other issues. There was reported that 3 or 4 people that did the trials caught Bell's palsy. And, yeah, that's messed up. You don't want even one person to have a side effect. You're talking tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. I actually signed up to be in the trials. And I passed phase 1 and I passed phase 2. The problem is they wanted me to drive 85 miles to New Jersey to get the vaccine like 4 or 5 months ago. I'm like, out of here. I'm not driving that far. Then if it does, plus, I don't know if you know this, but if you signed up for the trials, you didn't know if you were getting the vaccine or if you were getting the placebo. And you think I want to walk around thinking that maybe I got the placebo and this stuff ain't doing nothing for me? And then you want me to drive 80 miles each way? I don't think so. Oh, I turned to the right. You know, a few of you out there sent me DMs and emails from Wednesday night because of Wednesday night's contest. And if you did not check out Wednesday's show, you are more than welcome to tune in to Wednesday, and you could take part in the contest. I am not picking the winner until December 23rd, but some of you out there have never seen the autographs of some of the people in NXT. I mean, look, you know people from the current roster. I think Undertaker has one of the most beautiful autographs. You would think the dead man, that maybe he would do something like simple, you know? Shawn Michaels has a beautiful autograph. But you look at like Roman Reigns, it's an R and an R. You do remember Dean Ambrose? Well, Moxley, when he was Dean, it would be a D and an A. Becky Lynch's autograph is pretty cool because she's got a symbol attached to it as well. So some of you out there said, hey, DT, could we get up close and personal look at the prize coming up? So I figured, hey, you know what? And by the way, if you see me writing stuff down tonight, that's only because I do timestamps from now on. Not only does everybody love that because you could just click and go right to the topic that you want to go check out, but it also forces me to stay on point, stay on the conversation, because, you know, you don't want to start a timestamp and then 10 minutes go into like old Don Tony shit and you go back and it's like, I just wanted to hear about Tony Khan, you know? So I'm telling you, Monday, truthfully, Monday, I know we're not in 2021 yet, but truly Monday was the beginning of taking this channel to the next level. You're going to see some subtle changes. Some we're going to announce. Some you'll just notice. Mish is going balls in with this, and we're actually going to probably add another host or two. You know, we're working on some other video projects out there. And one thing you got to understand, you know, there's a lot of people out there, and they have the right frame of mind, obviously. They mean well, and they really want to, you know, do the work, you know, but I don't think sometimes they understand the work that's entailed. And you see people, oh, can't do a show today. Oh, can't do this. Oh, have problems here. And then you see the unreliability. When we do stuff, we make sure if we're going to announce it, we're going to go 110% ahead. The last thing I ever want to do is start something and then can't live up to it. So anyway, enough rambling. For all of you out there that wanted to check out some of the autographs, I don't know if you could. Yeah, this is probably good. There you go. You could see Gargano and Damian Priest's autograph for those that never saw it before. You could check out Candice LeRae. Io Shirai's got a very, very nice autograph. You could see. You know, I'm being lazy here. Let's take it out of the plastic. Hopefully I don't tear it. Shit's actually, somebody's selling it on eBay right now for $300. Yeah, there you go. There you could see Damian Priest and Johnny Gargano, Io Shirai and Candice LeRae. I love Io Shirai's autograph, by the way. I love Dexter Lumis's autograph. I don't know if you could see Dexter Lumis's. You see it on the bottom? It just spelled Loomis, and he uses like the letter, the number 5. And then you got Ripley and Raquel Gonzalez. So, and your Shotzi's all the way at the top. Shotzi Blackco. Somebody's going to win that. Christmas. Anyway, SmackDown tonight. Not a bad show. You know, I can't believe people out there did not think of Bayley and Sasha Banks when they set up the main event for tonight. You know, for a lot of you out there, you remember when Sasha Banks became champion, or no, I think Bayley was still a champion, and they announced the match between Bayley and Sasha Banks, whoever was the champion. It was a couple of months ago. And people like, oh my God, why are you doing this on free TV? You need to do this on pay-per-view. You remember our conversation? That's the appetizer. That's to get you attracted, drawn into the match. Bayley and Sasha Banks, when they did the main event on SmackDown, that's like a new restaurant. And they're not open yet for business. And they don't even have to do this. But they give you little samples to try out. Little samples. Then be like, wow, this is incredible. To draw you in. And that's what they did with Bayley and Sasha Banks. This is TLC. A lot of stipulation matches. Carmella versus Sasha Banks. With all due respect, nothing against Carmella. But a lot of you out there, including yours truly, remember Carmella's reign and her needing James Ellsworth, and it was always BS finishes in a lot of her victories. So we haven't seen Carmella in the ring for a very long time. And a lot of people out there, as soon as they saw the vignettes for her return, a lot of people were poo-pooing on it. And a lot of people were comparing Carmella to a year ago, a year and a half ago. And a lot of people like, ah, this is going to suck. It's not going to be great. So they had to do this teaser tonight. And again, I don't understand why people didn't immediately think back to Sasha Banks and Bayley. They did the SmackDown main event to reel you in a little bit, but then they blew it full force on the pay-per-view. Same thing tonight with Carmella and Sasha Banks. And look, for all of you out there that really don't like Carmella all that much, you have to admit, she's actually improved. And she did not do a bad job tonight at all. Yes, the DQ finish is BS. What did you think? You think you were going to get a clean pin tonight? Then the internet would have ripped it apart. You had to get some type of a BS finish. Sasha Banks flips. You know, and I tell you, I know this is a really old, old reference, but I'm not sick of Sasha Banks' reign. Let me make that clear. But I remember back in 83, 82, 83, well, more 83, 83. When Bob Backlund was already the heavyweight champion for about 4 to 5 years, And us, since we would always get the main events and get all the exposure here in New York, towards the end, people were getting a little bit fed up with Bob Backlund as the heavyweight champion. And what started happening more and more is you would have DQ finishes, you'd have countouts. You know, I remember one time, no BS, I went to Madison Square Garden. This was right towards the end of his championship reign. And he had a match against someone. And the match was great. And the crowd was into it. But at the very end, they had him like crotch someone on the top rope. And just because of the crotch and some other nonsense, they disqualified Backlund. And the crowd was booing. And you started to see that he couldn't get wins just based on, it just wasn't working much anymore. So they had to keep doing these BS finishes. So tonight, to see the baby face, technically, Sasha Banks, just snap and get disqualified, you know, that's kind of the cheap way out. Because usually the heel is the one that snaps. The heel doesn't care about the belt for the moment. And in the end, Sasha Banks, she flips out, she gets disqualified, and that's that. Now, you saw Carmella's entrance is different now. No more moonwalks. Champagne at ringside. Champagne, caviar. Expect that to incorporate to the match at TLC. It's got to be like a no DQ. It's got to be something with gimmicks. And that's what tonight was for. Tonight was to add interest in their match at the pay-per-view. And tonight was also to show that, you know what, Carmella is not half as bad as she used to be to a lot of people. So you see that. You see what happened tonight. You add a stip to it or some gimmick to it, and it draws a lot of interest. I mean, look at Halloween Havoc. I just showed you that banner. I mean, some of the people that were on that card, you know, you look at the quarter hour ratings on a weekly basis, they would draw flies. And then simply because they had a stip or a gimmick attached to their match, suddenly they drew numbers. So, and speaking of ratings, yes, we will talk about AEW's rating, NXT's rating. Tell you the most interesting thing about it. You know, I've said many times before, I don't have any problem with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez and others out there being huge, huge, huge fans of AEW. Nobody's forcing anybody to tune into their stuff. So I understand that going in. But I saw Brian Alvarez's tweet Wednesday afternoon, and all he wrote in big capital letters was, "Holy shit." And it was right after 4 p.m. Eastern, so I knew it had to do with the ratings a little bit. And, you know, I'm just like, okay, they obviously must have done an outstanding number. And they did do an excellent number. They did better than last week. And if you remember last week, I explained that the rating last week did not really reflect Sting because a lot of people were not aware he was going to be on. And you didn't have people changing the channels to see what was going on. We talked about that last week. But this week was going to be the telltale sign as far as Sting's involvement. Then they teased Shaq and a few other things. So this week's rating went up. But the funny thing about it is if you look at last week's rating compared to this week, you only had another 40 or 50,000 fans tuning in. They made you seem this week that this was, now, the reason why it was such a big number was because a lot of people focused solely on demos, and AEW was like number two in one of the big demos, two for the whole night. And, you know, that's where they got wet. But in the end, when you looked at it, it wasn't a huge surge of viewers. But when I get into the quarter hours, and maybe you want me to do it right now, I could honestly say, maybe at the very beginning when AEW Dynamite launched, but this show was the first one that you really saw fans changing the channel, channel surfing, going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And that's what we used to do during the Monday Night Wars. I mean, I've talked about it before. I think I have extra arthritis in this thumb simply because of hitting last channel, last channel, last channel. You go to Nitro, you go to Raw, you go to Raw, you go to Nitro, you go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So, Sam is saying, get the ratings out of the way. See the benefits of tuning in live. You influence me as far as what to do. So, since we're on the ratings talk right now, let's talk about the ratings, okay? Let's get into them quickly. You know, there's no surprises, obviously, as far as, you know, who drew what, because the ratings are out already. Let's get into it. So this week, AEW, I think it's fair to say they ass-whipped NXT in the ratings. AEW did 995,000 viewers. NXT did 659. You know, these morons that'll say, oh, they didn't draw a million viewers. Like I said, if you know anything about Nielsen, you don't have two boxes in the same house. A house cannot register AEW and NXT at the same time. So you remember Wednesday, I said, don't be surprised you got quarter hours that get close to 1.8 million viewers, which would be more than Monday Night Wrestling. You cannot look at just AEW and say, oh, they didn't get a million. Because Wednesday Night Wrestling did a better number than Raw. And that's saying something. That's saying something. Franchise says, well, they didn't draw a million. I understand that. But keep in mind, you had another wrestling product going head-to-head with them that scored 660,000 viewers. If those viewers, if NXT wasn't on Wednesday, AEW would have went over a million. And NXT would do a better number as well. I'm telling you, I've made predictions in 2020 that have come true. Some I've stepped in shit, let's be honest. In January or February, I said this is going to be the year of commingling, where promotions are going to work with each other. This was before COVID. I had no idea we were going to end up where we're at right now. NWA doing stuff with AEW, MLW, allowing some of their wrestlers, and now Impact Wrestling, and now you hear teasers of this and this. And I mean, it felt, at the beginning of the year, it felt like, you know, you would have promotions working with each other a little bit more. You know, you save money that way as well. I mean, it's a big money saver. So never did I think it would be on this level right now. But I'll make another prediction. Sometime in 2021, one of those companies will change their night. And I think it'll be NXT. And I think it'll move to either Tuesday night or Thursday night. Personally, I would rather it to be Tuesday. But because of AEW Dark, because of Impact Wrestling, I think Thursday night is not bad. Because if you really look at it, you'd have Raw on Monday, and you get a day or 2 days break from WWE programming. Tuesday, you have AEW Dark, you got Impact Wrestling, and you got other MLW as well. And MLW is Wednesday. Wednesday, you have MLW, you have AEW Dynamite. Thursday, you have NXT. And then Friday, you have SmackDown. So I think that will happen in 2021. It only makes sense. Of course, us wrestling fans would absolutely love it. The advertisers would love it even more. I mean, you think about it, an advertiser that wants to buy advertising space for NXT, and NXT announces that they're going to go start airing on a separate night where there's no competition from AEW, those advertisers would love that. It's possible that, you know, the USA Network and would make even more money. Advertising revenue may go up because those numbers would go up. There's a lot of people out there that don't like that they have to, TiVo One, well, TiVo's outdated term, but DVR One, Watch Live the other, or sometimes you got to pick and choose, and you change channels, you miss something, and then you got to go back and watch it. So anyway, let's get into the ratings, shall we? I think AEW, since they won, I think it's only fair we get into their ratings first. By the way, if you enjoyed today's show, I appreciate it if you hit that like button. If you're not a subscriber yet, please do. We're getting close to 17,000. You know, we want to hit 20, so we could, I could do another challenge, and then we focus on 25,000. And I already know what we're going to do for 25,000. Someone will be a guest on this show. Someone that I know you will absolutely love. Someone that you have seen on TV quite often. Already accepted to come on. We're just waiting for the right time to do it. So anyway, AEW. Here's your breakdown. Hour one, 1,022,000. Hour two, 967 for a composite of 995. This is the first time, I think, in 3 weeks that AEW's hour two was a lower number than hour one. And this is pretty much what's been the norm before. So now you're saying to me, okay, they did over a million for hour one. Tell me who scored well. Now, remember I said before, Wednesday I said that wrestling would do 1.65 million viewers. I was off by 9,000. But I also said that don't be surprised if you have one or two quarter hours where they go over 1.8 million. The first quarter hour of wrestling on Wednesday went over 1.8 million. That was a higher number than Raw. And that's a big deal. So anyway, the Young Bucks versus Jack Evans and Angelico, and then what transpired after with the Acclaimed and SCU, you know, getting involved after the match is over, that scored 934,000 viewers. Now, if you want to see what I was talking about as far as fans starting the channel surf, which you knew was only a matter of time to happen, when I read you these numbers, if you got a pen, napkin, you know, just jot down the numbers, and then you look at AEW's eight quarters, and you look at NXT, and you'll see the pattern. You'll see some channel surfing going on. It's pretty cool. Quarter two, Darby Allin, that video where they were showing him images, and they did one with Sting, and then the Cody Sting segment with Darby Allin in the rafters. That increased 135,000 viewers to 1,069,000. It was the highest quarter for the entire night. So Sting's return, a lot of curiosity. That quarter scored it. Now, what was good about this is AEW did not have any big drops throughout the night. There was one quarter that, you know, there was a pretty big number, and there is one quarter in NXT. You got to wait till I get to that quarter. So we got the Sting quarter hour, 1,069,000 viewers. Quarter three, which was FTR versus the Varsity Blondes, and the segment with Hangman Page at the bar, and then you had Alex Reynolds and John Silver agree, well, convince him to team up with him next week against Private Party and Matt Hardy. That rating dropped slightly. It dropped 47,000 viewers to 1,022,000. Quarter four, which was Dustin Rhodes versus 10. You had the Dark Order trying to recruit Dustin, offering him a position as 7. You had the backstage segment with Shaq, Brandy, and the very beginning of the Inner Circle segment. That rating went back up 41,000 viewers to 1,063,000. So if you want to look at it, Sting's quarter hour did 1,069,000. Shaq's quarter hour did 1,063,000. Not bad. Quarter five, pretty much the entire Inner Circle segment, the quick interview with FTR and Tully Blanchard, that dropped 53,000 viewers. I think this is 2 weeks in a row that the Inner Circle segment actually went down in the ratings from the previous quarter. Just pointing it out, not trying to cause controversy. By the way, talking about controversy, you see all that garbage that went on today about Keith Lee and Otis and Dabba Kato and others sent to the Performance Center? Oh, I can't wait to get into that. Oh, I can't wait. So, quarter five, which, you know, I think quarter five and quarter six, AEW's got to be a little bit disappointed. Quarter five, which I said was the Inner Circle segment, FTR, that went down 53,000 viewers to 1,010,000. The next quarter, which was The Butcher, The Blade, and Eddie Kingston versus the Lucha Bros and Lance Archer, that quarter hour for that match dropped 84,000 viewers to 926,000. The segment, the interview with Kenny Omega and Don Callis, increased 37,000 viewers to 963,000. And the main event, Orange Cassidy versus MJF for the Dynamite Diamond Ring, that increased only 8,000 viewers to 971,000. So hour two, not as strong as hour one, but still uber impressive, let's be honest. So that's how the ratings went for AEW. Now, NXT, There was like two quarter hours that whole night that I think people were really into. The very beginning, which quickly felt like a wet fart because it felt like a WWE Raw or SmackDown segment. Remember? The cat is back. The cat is back. The cat was back 2 weeks ago. You did nothing. The mice played for 2 weeks. The cat is back. The cat is back. And then this person's music hits. 20-second promo. This person's music hits. 20-second promo. This person's music hits. And then Finn Balor walks away. You know, Karrion Kross, you know, wants his title, doesn't attack Finn Balor, but attacks Damian Priest. Okay? However you want to look at that, that's fine. But here's your quarter hours. The opening quarter, the cat is back. The cat is back. And then that backstage segment with Killian Dane and Pete Dunne, opening did 782,000 viewers. So now the first quarter, you're like, oh shit, we're 1.8 million viewers. And we didn't even get Sting yet. We didn't even get whatever we thought was going to go down post War Games. So this could have been possibly a 2 million viewer night. We will get a 2 million viewer night within the next 2 months. Even if COVID is still here, you will get a 2 million quarter hour somewhere. Mark my words. Problem is, 72 hours removed from War Games. You think you really want to ride that high. Everybody loved War Games. After that, the cat was back. Jake Atlas versus Isaiah Swerve Scott. And then you had Grizzled Young Veterans versus Ever-Rise versus Marcel Barthel and Fabian Aichner Imperium. The rating dropped 167,000 viewers. That's what went up against Sting. 167,000 viewers. Now, if you go back to AEW's quarter two, they increased 135,000 viewers. You see where it's going, right? This is the first night since almost the beginning of Dynamite started airing that you saw clearly channel surfing back and forth. AEW went up 135, NXT went down 167. Think about it, 167,000. Not good. The end of that tag match, Jake Atlas and Isaiah Swerve Scott, no disrespect to any of those people in those two matches, but I'm watching, I'm like, why is this airing 72 hours after War Games? Then you had the brawl with Toni Storm and Io Shirai. If it wasn't for that brawl in that quarter hour, they would have had an even further drop. Quarter three ended up increasing 39,000 viewers. Quarter four, which was Tommaso Ciampa versus Cameron Grimes. Sorry, Mr. Grimes. Still continues. That quarter hour dropped 54,000 viewers to 600,000. At this point right now, you have AEW outdrawing NXT 1,060,000 to 600,000. Add another 100,000 to that, and AEW almost doubled that quarter hour. Quarter five, which was the end of Ciampa versus Grimes, the Raquel Gonzalez interview, and that awesome segment with Xia Li and Boa. You know, I don't know what you called it, but it was awesome. That quarter hour increased 38,000 viewers to 638. Quarter six, the segment in the ring with Candice LeRae, Johnny Gargano, The Maid, do we call it that? And Austin Theory. It was me, Austin. It was me all along, Austin. That segment increased 37,000. And look, nothing personal against Indy Hartwell. But, you know, it's just a running joke on the show. You know, if you actually look at her closely, she's a woman of a few words. Is that the night's polite way to say it? She's a woman of very few words. That segment increased 37,000 viewers. Killian Dane versus Pete Dunne, very surprised that it only went down 31,000 viewers. It was a good match, but a bullshit finish. And you know that's just setting up the tag team champions against Drake Maverick and Killian Dane, which to me, they have no shot of winning those belts. That quarter hour increased 31,000 viewers to 644. And the main event, Raquel Gonzalez versus Ember Moon. If you remember Wednesday, we all agreed they need to do at least 650,000 viewers. Anything below 650 would be a huge disappointment, especially for Raquel Gonzalez. That quarter hour increased 21,000 viewers to 665. So, you know, you look at the cards, NXT, they could have done a lot, you know, better with the match selection. I think a lot of the wrestlers from Sunday deserved Wednesday off, let's be honest. But, you know, AEW is starting to build momentum. People are feeling that AEW is starting to get ready to take it to a next level. And people need to understand this, too. And I'm not going to get into a whole rant tonight about Sting or anything like that, because we still don't know exactly what he's going to be doing. But remember, TNT, the TV deal that they did with AEW was worth $175 million. All right, that's a lot of money. $175 million. So you know AEW is going to splurge a little bit here, splurge a little bit there. So, you know, I don't know how much the deal is for Sing. You know, Shaq, I think, does some stuff with TNT. And you know what? Same thing with Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg, that show that Cody was involved in, the big show, whatever it is, Snoop is involved with that as well. So when Snoop shows up for that holiday episode, it's probably more to hype up the TV show. And that might have been at the request of TNT, not AEW. So even though the other night, you know, we thought it'd be interesting to see how WWE feels about that, at the end of the day, you know, Snoop is all over the place. You know, I don't think this was designed, you know, this isn't like, you know, WCW in 1993 when they're starting to bring in like Mr. T and others to try to like, you know, get some, obviously they want to get numbers, but, you know, I honestly think even if Snoop was not Sasha Banks' cousin or whatever he is, even if he didn't do her entrance stream, and even if he didn't do that thing with The Undertaker recently, even if he had no relationship with WWE ever, I think Snoop Dogg probably still would have showed up on Dynamite. So I don't think this is done as, oh, look, even Snoop is defecting from WWE to AEW. I don't think that at all. Now, will WWE maybe refrain from doing some business with Snoop down the line? Possibly. Possibly. You know, you've seen a couple of WWE Hall of Famers make some cameos with AEW over the last year plus, and for some reason they have made no appearance on WWE television. None. Not even an LED screen. But can I at least be on the LED screen for Thunderdome? Come on, Thunderdome, I got a webcam. Nope. Nope. So those are your ratings. Now, I want to just throw this out there. Let your imaginations run wild. Now, yes, we know that Kenny Omega is going to appear on Impact once again. I don't know why anybody out there actually thought that this wasn't going to happen. You know, you do a work. Look, Don Callis shows up a couple of times. Kenny Omega leaves and shows up in Impact. What would be the big deal if he shows up once, screws in the new nameplate, throws Moxley's on the floor, insults, you know, Matthews a little bit and brags about AEW and then doesn't come back anymore? That makes no sense. So, of course, you're going to see a little bit more going on with Kenny Omega and Impact Wrestling. In fact, I think we talked about it Wednesday. I think Kenny Omega will probably end up going up against Rich Swann. It makes sense. Personally, I think Kenny Omega and Rich Swann would be a pretty damn good match. Is it going to be a ratings killer? I don't know about that. But I personally think what should happen next is Kenny Omega appears on Impact Wrestling once again, and this time he gets into a verbal confrontation with somebody from Impact Wrestling. Or maybe they want to confront him, get off our show, and this and that, and this leads to this. That's the way it's got to go. But here's the tease that I wanted to share with all of you out there. Nobody knows what this is going to be. A lot of people think that this may actually be Kenny Omega and Rich Swann, but unfortunately, I'm not trying to say anything bad about Joey Janela, but for those who thought Rich Swann versus Kenny Omega could possibly happen this week on Dynamite, no, you're getting Kenny Omega versus Joey Janela. And this is just to throw, you know, wipe a week out. of Kenny Omega's title reign. You know, they're trying to hype it up. Oh, if Joey Janela wins, he gets a title shot against Kenny Omega in the future for the AEW title. As much as we like Joey Janela, you think there's a rat's chance in hell of happening Wednesday? No, no. They're just trying to hype it up, you know? So anyway, Tony Khan writes this tweet tonight. He says, and I quote, "A challenge was made today for an important match to take place live on AEW Dynamite next week. It was captured by paparazzi at the airport, and having seen the footage, I absolutely will sanction this match for Dynamite. We'll post a video challenge and announce the match tonight." Now, anyone out there have any idea if the confrontation was Joey Janela and Kenny Omega? Because I know they announced that match tonight, but I didn't see any video footage attached to it. So that could very well have ended up being what Tony Khan was teasing. But if it's not, I personally think this might be something kooky, something goofy. Like maybe like Jade Cargill had a confrontation with Red Velvet. You know, Brandy still got the broken arm. You know, so maybe before the end of the show, if any of you out there come across on social media tonight what this paparazzi video was supposed to be, let me know what went down so we could share it with our audience. If it doesn't get posted tonight by the end of this show, then I'll announce it Monday with Mish, and we'll comment about it as well. Now, Monday, I will talk about the situation with Ring of Honor. I mean, their final battle event, you know, got thrown in disarray today. Four big names are off the show for COVID concerns. So, yeah, we'll talk about that on Monday. There might be another name or two added to that. That's why I don't want to get into it today. Joey Nutella. I like Joey Janela. I don't know why Jim Cornette has this deep, 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 deep disdain. You know, I could see if Joey Janela did something to his family, this and that, but anyway, should we just bang out Joey Ryan? Take literally a minute. As I wrote tonight, the lawsuit orgy. Didn't they do that penis birthday party or whatever? And a lot of people are trying to distance their memory of Joey Ryan and the penis party on the first AEW. That was Tony Khan thinking at that time. Seriously, the penis party. So anyway, here's the deal. Actually, you know what? Before I do that, I want to give two super shout-outs. I just thought of that on the fly. Two super shout-outs. Crazy Cruiserweight. Old Wrestling Clickbait. Oh, my God. You go back. Man, you just revealed. Crazy Cruiserweight goes back with me at least 20 years. Because I used to talk 20 years ago how some websites would clickbait. And one time, and he just posted it, so this is the truth. One time back in 01, I think it was. It was either 01 or 02. Booker T, who was a SmackDown wrestler, some big website. I don't remember if it was One Wrestling or, you know, I don't think it was PW Insider yet, but one of these big websites. I know it wasn't Meltzer and it wasn't Keller. This website wrote in big letters, exclusive news. Will Booker T appear on Raw tonight? And everybody clicked on it, includes yours truly. And you click on the link, you hit all these pop-up ads, and then at the very bottom it says, "No, he's a SmackDown guy." I was so pissed off that night, man. I mean, because you get hit with all these clickbaits, and some of those sites, they never controlled what ads would pop up. And sometimes you would see, like, tits. And I don't mind tits, but, you know, I try to play a little coffee break in my office. I go and I want to check some news. Oh, Booker T might be at Raw tonight. Details here. Click the link and see boobs. You know, you got to be really careful of that. Oh, the good old days, man. Oh, there was some hard clickbaiting. Oh, my God, there was clickbaiting today with Keith Lee. You know what? Fuck Joey Ryan for a minute. Let's talk about the Keith Lee stuff. Then we'll talk about Joey Ryan. Then we'll talk about SmackDown. We'll talk about Goldberg and these nonsense WrestleMania matches that people are reportedly, possibly, likely, unlikely, maybe will happen at Mania. I got trolled. I got trolled many times back in the day. Absolutely. I admit it. We all get trolled once in a while. So anyway, did you see this garbage that was written today? I almost want to pull it up word for word. Okay. Short synopsis of it. It was reported today that Keith Lee, Otis, Daba Kato, trying to see who else, Keith Lee, Otis, Daba Kato, Dio Madden, and Omos were all sent to the performance center. Now, the funny thing about it is when you were a kid and you went to school, did you ever play the game telephone? While I'm explaining this, could someone right now in the chat room, could you go on PW Insider and use the word that they put in quotations that Vince McMahon sent them there for? It wasn't seasoning. I think it began with the letter R. If someone could go on PW Insider and just tell me the one word that they said. I don't remember. It wasn't seasoning, but someone will pull it up really quick. But anyway, when I was in school, back in like kindergarten, first grade, we used to play a game called telephone. I think I had maybe like 30 kids in this class with me. And what would happen is the teacher would whisper something in the first student's ear. No, it's not, you know, come by after class with only your gym shorts on. No, she would say something like, I had an apple today for lunch. And then, it wasn't retraining. No, you're close, keep it real. It wasn't reconditioning. You're very, very close. It wasn't retraining. It wasn't reconditioning. It was very, very close. People are guessing. Just go on PW Insider. It was in parentheses. It was a shorter word. And I might even remember it before someone pulls it up. But you would have 30 students in the school. And you would tell the first student something. And by the time it got to the 30th student, the first person would read on a sheet of paper what the teacher originally told he or she. By the time it got to the third, refine. Thank you, Michael Gonzalez. Could always depend on your brother. Refine. Refining. Okay? Remember the word refine. But you play telephone. Teacher tells the first student. Student tells the next student. Goes down the line till the student 30. By the time you get to the student 30, it says, oh, I'm going to go for pizza after we're done at school today. Hadn't said nothing what the beginning was. The original article this morning was that WWE sent some of the big talents, bigger size talents, to the performance center for some refining. Okay? Do you remember Mission I's discussion a week or two ago about The Undertaker? Remember when Triple H on the media call for NXT and Triple H said that Undertaker may actually come down and actually work with some of the younger guys? You could go back, and I wish I would have done timestamps at that time. I'm too lazy to pull it up now. But I remember specifically saying, if you go back and you watch The Undertaker's documentary, it showed him working in the ring in a performance center with some of the big guys. And this was like whatever it was, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, whatever it was. So refining is not a big deal. Wrestlers refine, they tweak, they this, they that. You know, Vince creatively, you know, has things in his mind that Keith Lee cannot work the NXT style on the main roster. It's not the same. You look at Dijakovic, T-Bar. He doesn't wrestle on the main roster anywhere near what he was doing in NXT. Refining is no big deal. And you would have thought today that people had family members and pets kidnapped. I mean, these people were bitter and angry about how dare they send Keith Lee to the performance at the refining. And then you had the flip side of goofs making fun of Keith Lee. You know, the bottom line with that article today, I mean, I went on my lunch hour and I was just looking online to see what's going on with news. And I even see Twitter. Twitter is so smart. You all probably saw it too. On the right side where it shows trending stuff, there was a paragraph that said, the reports are that WWE sent Keith Lee and others down to the... They're just getting more people to click on it because it's Twitter. That's how they make money. That's how they get out of it. So all of these people out there tweeted 5, 10, 20 times today in an uproar about this. So I'm telling you, in my opinion, this was much ado about nothing. I think back to Steve Austin when he went to the WWE and they were going to do the Ringmaster stuff, and then he tweaked his character and they tweaked this and he did this and that. Wrestlers all throughout their career will go back and, you know, try to enhance things, refine things, tweak things, add things. You know, did you see the trend that every single person is a big guy? So WWE sending them there, it's not that they all suck on TV and this is, oh, the writing team should be in the one at the performance center. It's much ado about nothing. Refining turned into reinventing. This was a nothing burger. People losing their shit, whatever side that you were on, losing their shit because how dare they do that to Keith Lee? What are you talking about? When they showed that Undertaker video working out with some of the guys that are on the main roster now, nobody had their balls in a bunch that they were working with the Undertaker. My God, you would want wrestlers to fine-tune, refine, tweak, enhance. You never want to be complacent. So I honestly, everyone, yes, and you're very welcome for everybody who's writing down the chat. Look, I understand why some fans would really take this the wrong way. But, you know, next time you should look up on Google the definition of refining. It's not anything major. They didn't get demoted. It's refining. It's just tweaking. You know, maybe extending their careers a little bit. Maybe trying to tell them, look, you're not in NXT anymore. You got to work and focus. You're a huge motherfucker. You know, you don't need to do this. You don't need to do that. People all over today, oh, well, Keith Lee has a history of blowing up. All right, so maybe the refining is, Keith, you know, you could do some palmos. You don't always have to leave your feet. Remember Brock Lesnar early on? Remember what he said to Lars early on? You don't leave your feet unless you do a move, you know? I mean, this is like wrestling from the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. There is a formula sometimes with big guys. You know, back in the day, you'd have this huge mountain of a man and somebody runs the ropes and runs into him and the other guy falls on the floor and he just looks. They did it with Hogan in 1979. Look at when Hogan first came into WWF when he was managed by Freddie Blassie. He would wrestle someone and that person would do everything possible. Hulk Hogan never left his feet until he did the leg drop. And I don't even think he was doing the leg drop at that time. So it's only refining, everyone. It's not a big deal. You know, I think people blew it way out of proportion for various reasons. Some people, look, they get a little offended by this stuff. Some people, I think, just have way too much free time in the day. And I think you should just let it go. Because in the end, it's only going to make them better. You know, a lot of us think that Vince is out of touch. I am with you. Vince McMahon will never step down unless, obviously, somebody comes a-calling from the pearly gates. But the thing is that you look at wrestlers throughout our lifetime being wrestling fans. WWE has made a lot more people than they have destroyed. Yes, once in a while, a wrestler would come along and, you know, they don't reach their potential. It doesn't work out, whatever reason. But they have a pretty damn good track record with their wrestlers. The storylines are crappy. But, you know, when these wrestlers, and they change their style, and they refine, or they get a new move, or they this and that, you think they just dreamt it while they were sleeping? So, it's not a big deal, everybody. It's not a big deal. By the way, best wishes to Arturo Ruas. I think it was the match against Kushida, arm injury, surgery. Not going to be out that long, But he is out right now because he had arm surgery following the Kushida match. You might remember that match. So anyway, I opened up the show tonight. Just a little tribute to Tiny Lister, who you knew as Zeus back in 1989. Who you knew as Debo from Friday. Anybody that tunes into my stuff on a weekly basis and been with me for a little while, you know that early this year, I think it was the 25th anniversary of Friday. I saw Friday when it first came out. Me and my friends went to a drive-in movie theater, and we were all hanging out. Like, we pigged out from 7-Eleven, and I didn't pay attention for most of the movie. So when I saw it earlier this year, it really was the first time that I ever really saw this movie. And I absolutely loved it. You got to remember, me, I'm older, and I've been on social media. I've been on the internet since its beginning. I remember in like 91 or 92 going over this girl's house, and all it was just a text chat. That was my first exposure to the internet. 1995, the internet was around, but it was nothing what it is today. And honestly, in my opinion, and maybe you'll come up with a movie, and by all means, in the comment section tonight, if you could think of one better, post it. Seriously, because not only will you open my eyes, but everyone else tuning in, you open their eyes as well. But I honestly believe, even if he didn't pass away, I honestly believe that Friday, because it was made in 1995, Friday is the last true, like, natural movie, like as far as like neighborhood stuff and everything, without the internet influence to it. You know, when you see people like riding the bikes and you see people partying, this and that, there's no internet, there's no surfing the net, there's no texting, there's no this, nothing. You know, that movie, I think, is the last of that breed. After that, you had social media influence, you had the internet always involved on TV and stuff. I mean, look, if you make a movie, even 10, 15 years ago, you make a movie, and if you don't mention a text or an email or anything like that, then, you know, you'd look like, what's wrong with this movie? But I'm telling you, Friday, to me, was the last of a dying breed as far as movies that does not reflect really today's influence with, you know, media, social media, internet, you know, texting. And if you could think of one after 95, please let me know, because I can't think of one. But this guy, 62 years old, way, way too young, had an unbelievable career. I have his IMDb link in front of me. And I went down his resume of movies. Now, this is something that a lot of you may not even know or realize. But do you know that as of this moment, he was involved in 7 or 8 movies that are either haven't been released yet or haven't been completed yet? This guy was busy, busy, busy. You could look it up. There is 7 or 8 films that are either done that haven't been released yet or in production that this guy was in. So you're going to see him post-mortem appear on some of these movies, and it's probably going to be a little bit creepy. But I went down his resume, and of course, us as wrestling fans will always remember Zeus. We'll always remember No Holds Barred. Some of you may remember Z Gangsta. But I tell you, I take pride, even on the history show, you know, praising Zeus. He wasn't very good in the ring, but he had that presence. And he was a scary motherfucker. That's why when you look at his resume and you see a lot of the roles that he had, you know, I mean, this guy was in demand. And look, if you've never seen the movie Friday, go check it out. You could be an Italian white Guido like me and still love that movie. I mean, it's just iconic. It's iconic. But I went down his resume. Now, obviously, I'm not going to read every film that he was in, but I just want to throw a few out there that, you know, just to give you an idea as far as what this guy has done. All right. I think his first ever TV appearance was in 1984. He was on one episode of the TV series Webster, that you may remember. All right. Now, I'm going to speed this up, obviously. Some of these movies you may have heard of. Some of them you may not have. 1986, 8 Million Ways to Die. 86, Armed and Dangerous. The TV show Perfect Strangers he was on. He was on Beverly Hills Cop 2 with Eddie Murphy. He was on there. First and 10, which I believe was a TV series. He was on there for 3 years. This is all before No Holds Barred, by the way. He had No Holds Barred, obviously, and his wrestling appearances, obviously. Then you had 9 and a Half Ninjas in 1991. He was on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Universal Soldier. Wasn't that Dolph Lundgren and Jean-Claude Van Damme? I think it was. He was on Universal Soldier. Let me go down a little bit more. The Meteor Man, 1993. The TV series Renegade he was on. He was on Walker, Texas Ranger. In the Heat of the Night. ER, that TV show he was on there. The movie Friday, which we said. Remember the TV series Step by Step? He was on there. He was on NYPD Blue once or twice. Let's see. And there's a couple other ones. He was on a TV show, Moesha, Malcolm and Eddie, the Jamie Foxx show, the TV series Sparks, Fifth Element, which I know a lot of you remember him from the Fifth Element, 1997. Jackie Brown, Hoover Park, The Players Club, Almost done. Stealth Fighter, Shark in a Bottle, Next Friday, which was obviously the second film that came out. Little Nicky. Some of you may remember from Little Nicky. The duo, Vegas City of Dreams. He was on Nash Bridges a few times. Star Trek Enterprise. Austin Powers, Gold Member. He was on there. Let's see, a few more. Never Die Alone. Knock the F Out. I remember that. I actually saw that. Santa Slay. Goldberg. Santa Slay. He was on there too. Forbidden Fruits. One Night with the King. Vegas Vampires Ascension Day. The Pink Conspiracy. Lady Samurai. Under One Roof. And we're still only in 2008. It just goes on and on and on. Hard Times. First Dog. The Lazarus Papers, which I know some of you are aware of, Perfect Sunday, Hopelessly in June, The Preacher's Family, Noah, 72 Hours with Empire, Beyond the Trophy, a few more. Silent No More, Heaven's Door, YT Fishhooks, which was a TV series. He was on there for a few episodes. The Rev, which was a TV series about 6-7 years ago. Johnny Dynamo, which was another TV series. Man and Wife, let's see, Zootopia, Beyond the Game, Fury of the Fist and the Golden Fleece, Cross. Oh, these are the movies that are in development right now. Beautiful Evil, Room and Board, My Cousin's Ghetto Wedding, Last Chance to Dance, Renegades, Domino, The Battle of the Bones, Popcorn Ceiling, The Tempest, 60 Minutes to Kill, Hellhole, and Crossed. And you can never forget I Got the Hookup, Part 2. This guy had a storied career. It blew me away to see how many appearances this guy has had. What a wonderful life, man. And I tell you, yes, he wasn't very good in the ring, but you look at the tributes, and you know sometimes when people die, that's when everybody says beautiful, wonderful things about people. But when they were alive, they were not like the nicest person. Everybody in the entertainment world that came across him have pictures of them hugging him, you know, posing with him. And everybody said, I haven't seen any negative stuff written about this guy. None. Zero. Lone Wolf remembers, I Got the Hookup, Part 2. So 62 years old. Now, his manager said that he died of COVID. There's other reports that he had a heart attack. Personally, I say let's wait for the coroner's office to give us the official cause of death. But it's sad because, number one, he was only 62. Number two, he was in phenomenal shape, obviously. The man was working his ass off, and you see what he was doing at the present time. But he also was on record saying that as soon as this vaccine comes out, he's getting it. So, you know, it's just really, really sad. But I know a lot of you out there know him more for his Hollywood roles than actually wrestling. I think it's fair to say, as far as wrestling fans go, Zeus was not treated very, very well in the wrestling community. They just basically, everybody just said he sucked in the ring. That's pretty much what the overall consensus was. But they absolutely adored him in Hollywood. And fans, like I said, it just in droves. Everybody, Friday, 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 Debo, 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 Debo. So, you know, rest in peace. Rest in peace. I tell you, we talk about, now, remember, he was a Hollywood guy before he became a wrestler. But when you look at wrestlers who went on to Hollywood, I look at this guy's resume. I don't know if there's anybody else that I could think of that who was a wrestler at some point for a long enough time that had that kind of resume. Amazing resume. Oh, David Peralta says he was in Straight Outta Compton. Straight Outta Compton, okay. Straight Outta Compton as well. There's so many movies. I mean, look, some of the movies, he played a security guard, he played a bouncer, he plays a prison mate. It's not like he was the lead role. But the photo that I always remember him of, other than wrestling and Friday, is the picture of, it was Dolph Lundgren, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and Thomas Lister, Tiny Lister. And I'm pretty sure that's the order that the picture was in. It's a pretty infamous photo. So I'm glad he's getting the recognition that he's getting right now. So rest in peace. Absolutely rest in peace. So Puffy 89 from before talking about AEW. Bret Hart appeared on the first AEW pay-per-view. Had the broken skull session with Austin. And yeah, WWE's got to pick and choose. I absolutely agree. Look. You know, it is what it is. You know what I mean? It's funny how people, like, don't want to see anybody fired from wrestling promotions because of COVID and everything like that. What about legends that are just sitting at home and mostly relying on cameos? And unfortunately, you don't see many, I don't want to use the term old-timers, but you don't see many old-timers on Twitch gaming. I mean, seriously, think about it. Tell me that wouldn't be cool if you had, like, Bret Hart or the Iron Sheik, you know, playing, like, some, like, blah, blah, blah of war game and just, like, motherfucker, I shoot you, I make you humble, you motherfucker. Like, I think those legends, even if, seriously, you mean to tell me you wouldn't go on Twitch just to watch, like, somebody who's in their 60s or 70s, that's a Hall of Fame wrestler, just have a meltdown and just lose over and over and over again. And they just yell and scream and complain. You mean to tell me you wouldn't watch that? You wouldn't watch that? Dorian Mesa, where's Dorian's comment? It's not a requirement. You don't have to super chat. Okay, he was in The Dark Knight as well. Yeah, I'm just running down the list. There's tons of titles that I flipped over. But yeah, Austin Kinkle says it, man. Come on. If Iron Sheik played Among Us, I am not the imposter. You know, like, I can't do an Iron Sheik impersonation, but I'm telling you, I would pay a couple of bucks to watch somebody I grew up with, you know, that has no idea what they're doing, and they're just talking and having meltdowns and keep getting murdered. I'm saying in the video games. I'm telling you, man, I honestly think that that should be something. That should be something. So, I don't know. I'm surprised. But my point is, you don't see a lot of these legends getting work. You see these virtual autograph signings. You see cameos. But they don't make anywhere near, you know, what other people are. So if somebody shows up in AEW, it shouldn't bar them from appearing on WWE or somewhere else. They're just trying to make some money. And at the same time, they do have a love of pro wrestling. They gave almost their entire adult life to pro wrestling. And then, you know, you think of Andrew Yang. You think of a union. You think of retirement benefits. You think of that, and you're like, these guys and gals don't have any of that. But at the same time, though, you know, for those that took the time to look into it, you know, starting a union is almost impossible. And look, have you seen anything transpire? You know, Andrew Yang, I like him. I know a lot of you like him, and his heart is in the right place. But all this guy does is tweet. He tweets. It's like you have a ton of people in the mountains, and it's a little chilly out. And all Andrew Yang does is he goes to every campsite, takes two sticks of wood, rubs it together to get a little spark, and then doesn't try to start the fire or keep the fire burning. He just starts the spark, leaves it there, and he goes on to the next thing. Rubs the two sticks together, sees a little spark, puts it there. And at the end of the day, like I said, 2-3 months ago, at the end of 2021, you're going to look back on, you're going to say, what did Andrew Yang actually do for wrestling? And at the end of the day, it's nothing. And then you're going to realize, as much as this woman from 90210, the SAG-AFTRA woman, you know, I don't remember, Gabrielle Carteris, you're going to realize what I said a month and a half ago, that union is doing nothing but ambulance chasing. Had a wonderful conversation with Zelina Vega. Yeah, and then what? They're going to do nothing. So, anyway. So, oh, yeah, no. Okay. David Peralta made a boo-boo. He said that he was not in Straight Outta Compton. He was from Compton. Yeah. Tiny Lister was born in Compton, California. Lived in a horrible area of California. Ghetto, crime, you know the deal. And I believed he was living in Marina Del Rey, but he never forgot his roots. And you'll see some social media, mostly on Facebook, you'll see people, young kids, posing with him recently, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. He would always go back to his neighborhood and would always try. I mean, there wasn't much he could do, but he would always try to inspire. And, I'm telling you, I'm not saying it because he passed. I'm just saying it because of, you know, what I've learned. Tiny Lister was really good people. And of all the people who passed this year, you know, some people obviously deserved all the accolades that they got. But I really appreciated the amount of love that was sent to him, Shad Gaspard. So, who was also, I believe, in California at the time. So anyway, rest in peace. Tiny Lister, rest in peace. Absolutely. On Wednesday I mentioned Santana was not on Dynamite, which you all saw, and I said I didn't want to get into the reason. I said something personal happened in his family. If he wanted to tell everyone, then he could tell everyone, and he did. So for those that were wondering, Santana lost his father earlier in 2020. His parents divorced, I think at a young age, and his mom remarried, and now, I think last week, his stepfather passed away. So he lost not only his father, but his stepfather, and he was very close with his stepfather. So that's the reason why Santana was not on. But look, if you're a fan of Santana and you are on his social media, send a couple of thoughts his way. I mean, he may not respond, but you know, I'm sure he would really appreciate it. So, now, let's see. Before we wrap up with some SmackDown discussion, because SmackDown tonight was really just to progress some matches for TLC. We'll get into that in a moment. Did you all see this nonsense that floated around as far as rumored WrestleMania matches? Drew McIntyre versus Keith Lee versus Brock Lesnar. Roman Reigns versus Goldberg. You know what the funny thing about the Roman Reigns-Goldberg one is? before Goldberg was on the bump a couple of days ago, none of these fools were talking about that. The minute Goldberg does recently what I love that he does, the minute Goldberg on the bump turned into Trollberg, then all of a sudden, no, we got exclusive news. This is the WrestleMania match that's being considered. Because he went on the bump and challenged Roman Reigns. Not challenged him to a match, but basically was, you know, running his mouth to Roman Reigns. Here's the facts about Goldberg and WWE. I don't need notes. I'm just telling you as it is. All right. Goldberg has a contract with WWE for about 2.5 more years. It runs through 2023. And in that contract, he is agreed to a minimum of 2 matches, I believe, per year. Now, they obviously didn't do anything other than WrestleMania, and he hasn't done anything since. But if you look at his contract, 2 matches in 2020, 2 matches in 2021, 2 matches 2022, 2 matches 2023, doesn't mean that he's good to do 2. Could be less, could be more, who knows? Injury could derail it. But right now, Goldberg is under WWE deal throughout 2022. So it makes sense for Goldberg to take on Roman Reigns because that was supposed to be the WrestleMania match. People were very, very angry and irate because Goldberg took the belt over Bray Wyatt and did it like that. And it felt like it hurt Bray Wyatt as the Fiend really, really badly. Nobody is against Goldberg wrestling 1 or 2 matches a year. If you're really that upset at it, when he does have the match or two, go out and walk the dog, walk the cat, walk yourself, go to the store, go jog, you know, go walk to the corner and back, go take a shit, do your laundry, iron, go in the help wanted section, go on OnlyFans, go play video games. Why do I keep looking this way? But I'm just saying, it's 2 matches. It's 2 matches. You know, I mean, it's not the end of the world. And think about it. Think about it. If he's only committed to 2 matches, the chances of him being a champion again is very, very slim because he would have virtually no title defenses. So even if he were to take on a champion, the odds are he will lose more than he will win because he is only committed to 2 matches. So, you know, if we heard, oh, he's committed to 6 to 10 matches, then I could see people really being concerned about it because, hey, they might try to do this and do that, do this. It would be extremely interesting to see how they would do Goldberg versus Roman Reigns with Roman Reigns being the character that he is right now. Maybe it doesn't fit. Maybe it doesn't make sense right now. But the bottom line is, could Goldberg versus Roman Reigns happen? Yes, it is a possibility. But when you look at the characters, man, it's really, really difficult to pull that off because Goldberg is a babyface. And I like Goldberg. I'm a fan of Goldberg, so I have no problem. I mean, the match he had with Undertaker was not good. And I was not happy that he defeated The Fiend. It hurt The Fiend's career at that time, without a doubt. I understand why it was done, but still. But, you know, at the same time, though, you know, Goldberg would still be ripped apart by social media. And social media has the loudest voice online. They have the loudest voice. And a lot of people out there like to ride the bandwagon because they guarantee the following. They guarantee the following. I mean, if you looked at today, you have people that don't ever talk about Keith Lee. They're all voicing out all this horrible stuff about Keith Lee. And then once the 10 tweets, the likes went down to 3, then all of a sudden, they changed their tune. No, 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 we really care about these guys, and this is just to help them, and this and that. People like to ride the bandwagon because it guarantees them a certain amount of attention. Look at what happened tonight with Carmella and Sasha Banks. They announced the match for tonight. And even though I know a lot of you out there, I was talking to a few people on Discord early, they all immediately thought, oh, this is what they did with Bailey and Sasha Banks. You know, as I said earlier, draw people in, and then it ends in some schmoz, but this leads to TLC. More interest. I guarantee you, a lot of you out there, almost all of you out there, have more interest in Carmella versus Sasha Banks now than you did before SmackDown started. So it makes sense. But early on, you see all these people ripping it apart. Why is this happening tonight? Why is this not safe for pay-per-view? Why is this? Why is that? And then ripping on before it even happens. So look, Goldberg versus Roman Reigns is a possibility. I'm still going with the idea that Big E is going to take on Roman Reigns. I did find it interesting today that today they did an interview with Big E on SmackDown, and he said tonight is the night that he starts focusing on himself and not being a part of a group anymore. And I like Big E, but I thought that was so funny on WWE's part because that happened right after the draft. It happened after the draft. In fact, if you even think about it, it happened before the draft because Kofi got injured. And you remember that hug? Because Xavier Woods was still out with an injury. Kofi got in. Remember, you know, he said something like, you know, give me your meat. You remember that? How many months ago was that? Three? So after 3 months, you repeat the same thing. That's like Finn Balor from 2 weeks ago. The cat is back. The cat is back. And then 2 weeks of nothing. So I personally think what they did tonight with Big E was to start the road to WrestleMania. And I, right now, even though we have no idea, I think Big E should be the one to win the Royal Rumble, if you ask me. Maybe I feel a little different as we get a little bit closer, but we'll see what happens. But, and this idea of Keith Lee versus Drew McIntyre versus Brock Lesnar, I don't know where people are getting. I know where people are getting that, you know, because the rematch between, you know, McIntyre and Lesnar, and then because Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre, they're there earlier this year. But I think people are just throwing stuff together, honestly. Some of the other stuff that's floating around makes little to no sense at all. So I tell you all, let's just take a seat, wait and see what happens. Let's see who rides the momentum train. And they're the ones that are likely are going to be in a better position for WrestleMania. Now, very quickly, Joey Ryan, all right? I have made a decision after Bob Ryder died. I'm not making fun of Mike Johnson anymore. I'm not making fun of Wade Keller and others anymore. I mean, I did cut it down drastically over the last couple of years, but, you know, it's stupid. It's stupid. You know, back in the day, I had legit reasons to rip these guys apart. But I will say this, you know, Mike Johnson, you know, maybe should spend a little bit more time understanding the legal process than anything else. Because he mixed two things together. And every cut and paste website out there just wrote the same thing. And it makes no sense at all. Here's what's going on with Joey Ryan. If you remember my diatribe earlier this year, Joey Ryan has no chance of winning any of these lawsuits. He's blaming it because of the speaking out movement and all these accusations that these women made against him and a couple of guys who said some things about him as well. And the thing is that he claims that he lost all his money from Impact. He claims he lost all his followers from Facebook, from Twitter. He claims he lost all his money from Cameo and Twitch and all his other things. The problem is we're in the middle of fucking COVID. And I'm not one to trash Joey Ryan. All right. I say this more as an educated opinion than anything else. But this guy never had a chance in court because he had no proof that he lost revenue. A lot of the companies that he claimed he was working from before were not doing shows anyway because of COVID. And I think he's from California. And California has had some of the strictest lockdowns. So for this guy to claim that he lost money here, the guy had no chance at all. What this guy did and what he was trying to do was, one, I think his number one goal was to try to get people to remove what they said about him. Didn't work. What he tried to do also was to get some people to scare them into some type of a settlement, and not necessarily money. If someone agreed to a settlement and part of the agreement was to take the stuff down and retract it and this and that, you know, that's just as good as well. So now here's where Mike Johnson gets it wrong and gets it wrong badly. There is something in the court system called an LOP. No, it's not OPP. You're down with LOP. Yeah, you know me. You're down with LOP. LOP stands for lack of prosecution. Lack of prosecution, all right, basically means that, and I'll give you the legal definition because I have it right in front of me. The legal definition of lack of prosecution is that a case will be generally dismissed for lack of prosecution. That occurs when the court closes a case as nothing has been filed within a specified period of time. The court presumes that there's no record of activity. The party does not wish to pursue the case. And the time of inactivity varies state to state. And a lack of prosecution can occur when no service of process has been made. Okay? In simple English, if Joey Ryan and his lawyers do not serve these people with papers, he could file it in court. But if people haven't been served and he hasn't given evidence to the court to back up his claims, the court is not going to wait forever. So the court told Joey Ryan, you have until the end of the year. Otherwise, we're closing this due to lack of prosecution. Joey Ryan asked for an extension, and I think he was granted it. But here's the thing. Here's where Mike Johnson really gets it wrong. And this is fantasy land if we could do this. He says, check this out. He says, Mike Johnson, that the court ordered him to show why legal actions should be continued and not dismissed. Okay, that's fine. Then he says, in many of the cases, excluding the lawsuit against Ring of Honor and Pell Primo, there have been no response by the defendants or even a court. So the lawyers have until the end of the year to file pleadings in an attempt to convince the court. And if the defendant, this is the kicker. If the defendants respond to the court, then Joey Ryan would have to also provide with the court. Basically, what he's saying is that if people don't answer, their papers are being served, that this could be thrown out because of lack of activity. Imagine you getting served papers and you're being smooth and sued in small claims court, whatever court it is, and you think, okay, I'm just not going to answer it. I'm going to just let it sit on my dresser. And because of that, it gets dropped because of lack of process, lack of prosecution. That's insane. You serve someone with papers and they don't answer, they could lose by default. And I've brought up many examples in the past. So the bottom line is Joey Ryan has shown no evidence whatsoever as to why he lost all this money or how he lost all this money. And there's really no way to prove it. So I think up until this point, Joey Ryan was hoping that people who he went after would just say, look, if I retract my statement, will you drop the case? Some of these people went on GoFundMes to try to get money, to raise money for a lawyer. Meanwhile, they weren't even served with papers. Where's that GoFundMe money go? If they were never served, and I know one person right now that has $5,000 raised for a lawyer to go up against Joey Ryan, that person was never served papers. Where's that money go? Joey Ryan has no case, in my opinion. He's hoping Impact Wrestling will offer him a little deal. I don't think Impact Wrestling is going to, and I don't think they should. All these other feds, They were inactive during COVID. He has no case. He has no case. The best thing for Joey Ryan to do is to let this die. There is a saying, time heals all wounds. And I honestly, truthfully believe. Now, those other two accusations, I don't know all the details, but they do sound almost on a criminal level. But there's no way to prove that. But I'll say this. All the other accusations, and I've said this before, what it seems to me is that Joey Ryan was just a pig. He was just a player, and he used girls and manipulated them to get laid. It's not illegal, so to speak, but it's just a disgusting person. You know, he would lie in a text, make sympathy his way, you know, and he was a piece of shit, as Guardian of Chaos is saying. Unfortunately, being a piece of shit most times is not illegal. I brought this up. You know, I had no leverage when I used to go out when I was a kid, you know, in my teens and 20s, because I was a fat bastard, you know. But I knew people that would go into clubs and they claim they do this for a living and they do that for a living and they got all this money and they whip out. It would look like a stack of hundreds, but it's just $100 wrapped around like 30 singles and stuff like that. And people would try to, you know, sweet talk people, you know, to have some fun. I mean, Joey Ryan, you saw the pattern. You know, somebody is a little depressed. Oh, I'm going through a bitter relationship. Oh, I had a bitter breakup, blah, 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 blah. Oh, you want to get together and work out? Oh, you want to get together and make out? You know? So I don't think, and you know what? Bravo to the people who stood up to Joey Ryan. And look, Joey Ryan has every right to go to court. But from what I've seen, there is no evidence to back up any of his claims of the financial losses. There's no way. There's no way to back it up. There's no way to back it up. So, you know, he tried to scare some of these people into settlements, and it seems like nobody bit. And good. Good. The quicker this court case closes, the better it is, because to me it was just a waste of time. Joey Ryan, even though I'm a nobody, I'll give him a piece of advice, just an opinion. You know, you should concern yourself with rebuilding your brand, rebuilding your personality, rebuilding your persona, rebuilding how you come across to people by just being straight up. You know, nobody's perfect. Everybody has flaws. You know, I think a lot of people would have forgave him. And he's like, look, you know, I'm a lonely guy. I love women. And unfortunately, I, you know, kind of like sweet talk some people, and you know, because I just didn't want to be alone. There's a lot of people out there that probably could relate to that. And I think if this guy starts being himself and not this character, I think he would probably repair himself 1,000 times over. Because even if some of these people did retract the statements, you know, 95% of you out there gonna say, "Oh, those people retracted simply because they didn't want to be sued." That aura of Joey, and honestly, Joey Ryan hurt himself 1,000 times more with this. If I was a wrestling promoter, I would not work with Joey Ryan other than maybe a one-match deal down the line. I would never try to ink him to a contract because then I got to worry if something goes wrong or if I'm not happy with his performance and I want to terminate him, that I'm going to be possibly sued in court because of it. No, stay away from this guy, in my opinion. So anyway, with that said, preemption note, SmackDown will be airing December 18th, 1 week from today, on FS1. There is going to be college football, their Pac-12 championship game. That will be airing next week on Fox 5. Well, here in New York, it's Fox 5. I'm sorry, regional. But for all of you out there, if you want to watch SmackDown next week, FS1, 8 p.m. Eastern. So tonight was the first Thunderdome at Tropicana Field, home of the, is it Tampa Bay Rays? I think it's home of the Tampa Bay Rays. So, you know, it looked the same to me. Didn't feel much different. Show opens up. I'm pulling up my notes over here. We have a contract signing. Sasha Banks and Carmella. Carmella doesn't come out. She's got an assistant. So basically, they're signing the contract for TLC. Oh, Jeremy, Fox 26 in Houston. So, yeah, I say Fox 5 because I live in New York and I'm always used to Fox 5. But so they do the contract signing, and basically what ends up happening is Carmella doesn't come out. Sasha Banks does. Sasha stamps the contract. Carmella's assistant, you know, is basically out there for Carmella. And Sasha Banks doesn't want to wait till TLC. She challenges Carmella to a match tonight. Carmella agrees. Adam Pearce makes it official. They're going to have the match tonight. And then Sasha Banks hits the backstabber onto Carmella. And just Carmella's looking through the Titantron, smiling. So the main event is set up for tonight. And as we talked about already, this was just to add attention to the match at the pay-per-view. And I think WWE did a very good job of that tonight. We had what we all knew was going to happen. Last week, you had that awful backstage segment with the Street Profits. And the Street Profits are not bad, but they had an awful segment in the back where they're interrupted last week. I think they were first interrupted by Bobby Roode because they beat them the week before. They deserve a tag title shot. Then Cesaro and Nakamura come out there, or Cesaro came out there, and he feels his team's... So you knew this week somebody was beating a Street Profit to give the suspension of disbelief that they, because they lost individual matches, then they can have a championship match. The problem is we already have five or six matches confirmed for TLC. You can't have every champion on the card. Maybe it's a dark match, a pre-show match, I don't know. But tonight we had Montez Ford taking on Dolph Ziggler. And, you know, it was weird because the match had started, and then later on there was a moment where all these blue, you know, those cups come down. They used to be red, now they're blue because of SmackDown. And then they go to commercial break. And I'm like, well, that was a little bit goofy. But, you know, the match was fine. But I think it was very uneventful because we knew the outcome. Nobody has a feud right now with the Street Profits to challenge for those tag titles. They tried to plant the seed last week. Dolph Ziggler has the match with Montez Ford tonight. And then what happens is Bobby Roode jumps Angelo Dawkins at ringside. Montez Ford gets distracted, sees what's going on at ringside. Dolph Ziggler knocks Montez Ford off from the top rope, hits the super kick, gets the win. So now we're supposed to believe that Roode and Ziggler are viable candidates for the tag team championships. You know what? Yeah, who's that? I like that Dominik and Rey should have been involved with this. But I think we're going to get Baron Corbin's Knights feuding with Dominik and Rey, or Dominik and Murphy. We don't know how much Rey can go right now. But look, I like Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. But to me, the way it feels right now, they have no momentum to be tag champs. The Street Profits, I don't like comparing them to New Day, but they're very athletic, they're very young, very charismatic, very likable. And, you know, this was the replacement of when New Day was on Fox. Now you got the Street Profits. They basically just reversed roles. That's why they just handed each other tag titles. So we got a segment in the back. We're at a merchandise table. And Sami Zayn is upset. And he carries it to the ring, cuts a promo also that Sami Zayn has no merchandise. And he doesn't want to put money in the pockets of WWE, or, you know, even though he didn't say them by name. But he still would like merchandise for people that would represent him. And when at first, when he's in the back, you got Apollo Crews there, Tamina, which they don't know what to do with right now, let's be honest. They don't know what to do. Look, everybody backstage over there, they don't know what to do with. Apollo, they're doing nothing. Kalisto, they're doing nothing. What happened to Kalisto's attitude, that cockiness? They did nothing since then. They're all standing in the background. Big E is making fun of Sami Zayn a little bit. We found out earlier this week that Sami Zayn would take on Big E tonight. Non-title match, but you know, I still believe that they're going the Daniel Bryan route with Sami Zayn. Maybe there's a little diversion right now, but, you know, it's just the Daniel Bryan-Sami Zayn feud is what people want to see. But tonight we got Big E taking on Sami Zayn. It was a fun match. I got a kick out of when Sami Zayn was mocking Big E with his dance a little bit. Big E's music is starting to grow on me a little bit. Now he has that, and he used to do it back in the day, if you all remember. He used to, the white powder, he had the, like, the tray of white powder and just, like, smacking his powder everywhere. You know, it's fine. It's fine. Big E, I'm telling you, I will still stick with it. I think Big E should be the one to win the Royal Rumble. I'm not saying it will happen, but right now, that's who I would like to see win the Royal Rumble, more than anybody else. And we're only talking on the men's side. But Sami Zayn, Big E had a really good match. The end was a little bit eh. And basically what happened was Sami Zayn at one point in the match claimed that he broke his arm. Big E didn't believe him. Sami Zayn got pissed off, slapped Big E in the face. They start, you know, doing the chase around ringside. Sami Zayn runs under the ring. Big E runs under the ring as well. Sami Zayn emerges from the other side, but Big E grabbed Sami Zayn's leg. Sami Zayn beat down on Big E a little bit, jumped in the ring. Ref had counted to 10. Sami Zayn defeats Big E by countout. Eh, you know, it's probably the only way you could go right now, because if Big E pins Sami Zayn, then you kind of feel like, oh, okay, so maybe Big E should get the title shot to Sami Zayn and Daniel Bryan. So tonight, maybe we get a rematch next week. Bayley backstage segment with Carmella, and, you know, it is what it is. She gets a little confrontation with Bayley. I think we all want to see Bianca Belair and Bayley have a pretty good feud. You know, they had that little involvement with Natty and the Billy Kay stuff tonight. I mean, chat, I'm looking at everybody in the chat room right now. How do you all feel about Bianca Belair, not Bianca Belair, Billy Kay's mystery partner tonight? For those that don't know, all week, it might have started with the bump. I don't know if it was from the bump, but basically the Riot Squad was going to be taking on Billy Kay. Billy Kay had to go find a partner. And honestly, in times like this, this is where I get mad at WWE. Because even though I never liked the Iconics, and I always thought that Billy Kay was seriously the biggest crutch of that team. You know, when they split up, just to have Peyton Royce team up with Lacey Evans, you know, it's like, come on, man. Like, you split them up, and now you're pretty much admitting you don't know what to do with Peyton Royce. So they had a teaming up with Lacey Evans. So now they're teasing Billy Kay's got to go find a partner. And, you know, we have still where somebody on SmackDown could show up on Raw and Raw and SmackDown, vice versa. Like, what did they say, 4 times a year you could do that? So a lot of people all week thought Peyton Royce, they get a teamer up with Billy Kay. Even if it's for just one night right now, the problem is, you know, they're trying to keep the Riot Squad relevant. So the match goes down tonight. Billy Kay is out there against the Riot Squad. They reveal her tag partner to be Natalya. I mean, talk about all that hype all week. And it's nothing against Natalya. But it just, when you look at the whole storyline, and what was worse about it is, if this is Billy Kay's resume, Natty comes out and she's looking at Billy Kay's resume as if it's actually real. It was horrendous. So what ends up happening basically is Natty's doing a pretty good job against the Riot Squad. Billy Kay tags herself in and she loses. She loses. Feels like they did almost the same thing with Otis and Chad Gable. Speaking of Otis and Chad Gable, I guess we could bring that up right now. they're starting to do the oddball tag team of Chad Gable and Otis, you know, doing some training, and Chad Gable is more like the instructor and blah, 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 blah. Got some chemistry. I don't really have too much of a problem with it. They get mocked by Cesaro Nakamura. We find out we're going to get a tag match tonight between Cesaro Nakamura, Chad Gable, and Otis. Basically, it's almost the same thing as what happened with Billy Kay. They were having a competitive match. Otis, you know, got the hot tag towards the end, running wild, beating the crap out of Cesaro, beating the crap out of Nakamura. And then Chad Gable wants to be tagged in. So Otis tags him in. Chad Gable tried to do a missile drop kick. Cesaro caught him, put him in the giant swing. Nakamura hit him with the Kinshasa, and they lose. The backstage after that, Chad Gable tells Otis, I said for you to tag me in, but I didn't want you to tag me in. Like, I'm trying to make it seem. And we're supposed to forget that Otis was not in a great tag team called Heavy Machinery. It was just not very good. I mean, I could like the pairing with Otis and Chad Gable, but I kind of want it reversed. Like, I want Otis to rub off on Chad Gable a little bit. I mean, I don't want Chad Gable out there. Oh, yeah! But, you know, I don't know. I'm not feeling it. Felt like a lazy SmackDown at times, if you think about it. Little and large security. I like that, Dave Levy. Little and large security. So, three segments left. They do a quick interview in the back with Baron Corbin. He's with Wesley Blake and Steve Cutler. And for some reason, they got metal detectors. And Baron Corbin's going to be interviewed. And they're like doing metal detectors to make sure that nobody's carrying weapons. I don't know. It was like that. Thought that was pretty stupid, to be honest with you. And what happens if somebody has a weapon on them? What are they going to do? They're going to run away? But they are officially the Knights of the Lone Wolf. I think we all said on the show last week that they were going to be his Knights. I mean, we all figured that one out. It just felt blah, to be honest with you. So, Kevin Owens tonight, Roman Reigns, Jey Uso. Basically, Kevin Owens came out during SmackDown, and he's talking about, yeah, who's that? They're probably going to be the ones to get their ass kicked, you know, more than Corbin. And they will be like Corbin's lackeys, you know. Mm-hmm. Every couple of years, WWE does that. They had J&J security. They had, you know, others in the past. Look, I guess if they're getting some work on TV, it's better than none. But it just feels very random. And my God, Jackson Ryker, we talked about on Monday. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how I'm feeling that with Elias. So, I don't know. So, getting back to Kevin Owens, he hits the ring and he's talking about tables. He's talking about ladders. He's talking about chairs. And he said he's going to do whatever he can to climb the ladder, win the title back. Next thing you know, Jey Uso attacks him with a chair. And they're trying to play off that Kevin Owens' knee is seriously injured. So you can almost feel this TLC match getting put together through our very eyes. We'll probably have a moment where Kevin Owens is trying to climb the ladder and his knee is killing him. And then something will happen. He'll get whacked in the knee and he'll fall off the ladder and he loses the match. You know, so basically Kevin Owens fights back a little bit. He beats up Jey Uso, pop up powerbomb through the table. And, you know, it is what it is. Roman Reigns' music hits. He walks out with Paul Heyman. And Kevin Owens wants Roman Reigns in the worst way. And Paul Heyman is basically telling, you know, Roman Reigns, you run the show. You're the tribal chief. You run the show. You do this. You do it for your family. Blah, 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 blah. So we go to commercial. We come back. Kevin Owens is in the back being interviewed. He gets attacked by Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns throws him into like some barricades, you know, some of the storage boxes. And then it was cool. Like Roman Reigns goes on the camera. He's got this big smirk on his face. He's like talking to all of us. He's like, you know, I'm your tribal chief. And then he's basically addressing Kevin Owens' family that he's the head of the table. And, you know, he's going to like take Kevin Owens, you know, he's Kevin Owens away. He's going to take his food away from the table. So overall, I liked it. I mean, they're trying their hardest to try to convince us that Kevin Owens has a shot. Me, I think it's pretty much guaranteed, just like the matches with Jey Uso. We know who's going to be, what the outcome's going to be. But as long as we're entertained from the beginning of the match to the end, that's really all that matters. So, you know, I'm fine with Kevin Owens versus Roman Reigns. Kevin Owens is putting in 1,000% into this. Roman Reigns is doing a fabulous job. Jey Uso is doing an awesome job as well. The storyline sometimes gets a little bit confusing, but this is WWE tweaking it along the way, which is fine. So, you know, and look, the same WWE that everybody's praising the storyline for Reigns and Uso and everything else is the same WWE that they're getting absolutely, you know, their panties in a bunch because they send Keith Lee and a few to develop the performers to refine themselves a little bit. You know, fine-tune things. Oh, that's such a disgusting thing. Oh, my God. So, main event tonight, we already talked about most of it. Sasha Banks versus Carmella. Solid main event. At least we did not get one of those 3-4 minute matches with an absolute dumb finish. It started early enough that either we were going to get a really good match or we were going to get some extended BS segment after the match was over. We got both pretty much. The match was excellent, and Carmella did a fabulous job. Sasha Banks, we already know how talented she is. But unfortunately, what ends up happening is, you know, they're brawling. They're trying to make it a little personal. And Sasha gets Carmella in the corner, and she starts beating her down. And she doesn't break any of the moves. The referee is threatening to disqualify her, and he disqualifies her. The only thing I didn't like about the segment is having Carmella, because they know we could hear it at home, having Carmella say, "You went too far. You snapped. You went too far. You snapped." I thought it was stupid, to be honest with you. But because they had champagne and caviar and things at ringside, those ended up becoming weapons. After the match is over, Carmella takes a bucket of ice, puts Sasha Banks' head in it, beats her down a little bit. Sasha Banks gets a little offense in, but then Carmella takes one of those sugar bottles, and this is one of the more expensive ones. It actually has, like, fluid in it, so it looks like it's a full bottle, and she slams it into Sasha Banks. It's, like, right around her midsection towards her back area. Thing explodes, liquid goes everywhere. Carmella is celebrating a little bit. She's got a bottle of champagne. She's shaking it up, and there's fizz everywhere, hitting Michael Cole, hitting Corey Graves. And those sugar bottles, you know, I have 2 or 3 still in my office. And I told you, I will bring one home soon, if I remember, and I'll break one here. I mean, they not only look real, but when they break, the pieces look like shards of glass. I mean, it really, and the ones I have are not the top of the line. I mean, the ones that they use tonight, where you actually could fill it with some liquid, and some of the bottles, they have it where it's just a liner of liquid, like the whole bottle, because it's so much weight. Wasn't this segment, was it Moxley and Jericho? Didn't Moxley, like, pick up a bottle of Jericho's bubbly and he squeezed it too much and the bottle broke in his hand? So, no, you can't eat it. You can't eat it. It's not that kind of sugar that you could just, like, you know, throw it in a cup of coffee and, like, drink part of it. But, yeah, it was Moxley and Jericho that time. You know, they have bottles that you can put some liquid in there. The problem is it's such a delicate item. Even if you just grab it too hard, it'll just break into a million pieces. And Carmella did it right. Carmella held it from the lower part of the area. The bottom part of the bottle is the thickest part. So her holding it towards the bottle, she's pretty much guaranteeing that it's not going to break in her hands. It looked good. Sasha Banks selling it like she's unconscious. And that's how we go off the air. And again, I don't understand why people got so angry that this was a title match tonight. You knew it was going to end up, you know, without Carmella winning or losing. You knew it was going to be a BS finish. And this is just to make us want their match even more at TLC. And I think they delivered. I really do think they delivered. So, FT Gaggiano, what's up, my brother? It's late by you. What is it, like 7 a.m.? I think it's close to 7 a.m. by you. He's tuning in like 7,000 miles away, by the way. I think South Africa, right? Where is this, the Uso storyline going? Honestly, man, I'll tell you why overall I have no problem with the Uso-Roman Reigns storyline. Yes, he's in South Africa right now. In order to be powerful, you have to show your power over people. And if you just are beating down your opponents, it doesn't necessarily mean you have power. It's just you're beating down your opponents. So when it comes to being a tribal chief, being head of the table, in order to be the tribal chief, there has to be people underneath you. In order to be the head of the table, there has to be people underneath you. I've told this before. When I was a kid, my father used to come home from work. None of us would sit at the dinner table until he sat first. In fact, I kid you not, no BS. I know a lot of you know I was over at my parents' house yesterday seeing him. My father, by the way, thank you everybody for the prayers. My father's pneumonia. He's doing a hell of a lot better. And he's definitely, you know, I'd say about 70, 80% better. But even yesterday, he had gone to Walgreens pharmacy to pick up a couple of things. And we had dinner. And my mom put everything out at the table. And we stood in the living room area. And we waited till my father got back. And once my father sat down at the table, then we sit down at the table. It's just something we've always done. To me, it's a sign of respect. You know, it's not that my father's more powerful than my mom or anything like that. Even when it's just me and my mom, you know, like, I will not sit at the table until she sits there first. So Roman Reigns, to be the head of the table, you have to have other people at the table. And Roman Reigns is showing he has control over Jey Uso. Jey Uso does his own thing like he did tonight. But in the end, you know who's pulling the strings. And that's Roman Reigns in the storyline. I think ultimately, when Jimmy Uso is ready to return completely, a couple of things will happen. They can reform the Usos and be a heel tag team and go after the Street Profits. I personally think that would be an interesting feud to see, be something different for a change. They could also do a storyline where Jey Uso, you know, turns babyface and defies Roman Reigns. And then him and Jimmy Uso become babyfaces again, and they do their own thing as well. Me personally, I think ultimately there has to be a storyline where they want all the gold, that the family wants all the gold. Roman Reigns already has his. What about Jey and Jimmy Uso? They don't bring that up right now because they want Jimmy Uso and Jey Uso to be tag champs. All right, that's why every time Roman Reigns talks about Jey Uso, he always brings up, you're one half of the best tag team, greatest tag team of our generation, or whatever he says. He doesn't focus on Jey Uso being a singles guy. So I think ultimately you're going to see the Usos rejoin each other once Jimmy's ready. And I kind of lean towards them remaining heels this way. And I don't want them to be like what Cutler and Blake are to King Corbin. I want them to be able to branch out on their own. And maybe they do take the tag titles off of the Street Profits. And then Roman Reigns and the Usos carry all the gold, except for the women's championship. And who knows? I know Mish, in a perfect world, he'd love to see, you know, a female in the Roman Reigns family, inner circle, get a title, if you know where I'm going with it. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Anyway, before I go tonight, but right at the two-hour mark, which is what I wanted to do, which is very good. Just want to leave everybody with this because a lot of you just wanted my thoughts on this. WWE Network posted a little exclusive video a couple of days ago. Angel Garza. Angel Garza showing, basically talking about, you know, a woman and, you know, how much she's enamored. He's enamored by her. Where is my... I'm looking at my notes for the synopsis. So I'm just taking like little notes so I can put them up quick. So anyway, long story short, Garza's cutting a promo and he's talking about, you know, just giving compliments and to a certain woman. We don't know who the woman is. And this time he has the rose. And this time a woman takes it from him. All right. Now, I'm leaving that picture up there for a reason. So now a woman has accepted the rose, which means the woman will be revealed very, very shortly. Now, what got everybody talking this week, no, people did not have sources. You have these people, my sources tell me that blah, blah, blah is going to be with Angel Garza. No, this is what happened. After that video segment aired on the WWE Network, and we all found it online, a certain female updated her social media accounts. And she updated her social media accounts holding one red rose and smelling it. And that woman, be better if I have a little better picture, is this, Eva Marie. Right after the video was posted, Eva Marie posted that photo. Looks like the same exact rose. Somebody, Psycho says Dana Brooke. I don't think so, man. I don't think so. It could be a swerve. It could be a swerve. I just don't see Dana Brooke. I'll tell you why I think it's going to be Eva Marie. And I'll tell you why I like it. Some people might find that strange for me to say that because I'm not the biggest Eva Marie fan. But I'll tell you why I like it. Now, I went a little step further. Let me just show you this closely. I want to see, well, you know what? I can't really do it close. Actually, you know what? Yeah, I can. Let me do it this way. Let me just reload the photo. Hold on. Take me 2 seconds. When I saw Eva Marie post this photo immediately after Angel Garza, the first thing I did was this. I looked at the picture closely, and I zoomed in on the fingers. I know you're going to say, DT, you're a little weird, but I looked at the knuckles. Now, this is the left hand. The hand that accepted the rose was the right hand. So the right hand didn't have the ring on. But I looked at the fingers, I looked at the knuckles, and they looked the same. There's only one difference, though. When you go back to this photo, and you look at it closely, it's red lipstick. Red finger nail polish, not black. That photo with Eva Marie was black nail polish. So bottom line is, I think it's going to be Angel Garza and Eva Marie. And the reason why I like it is because Angel Garza's persona is this cocky man that all the women love and the women want. Eva Marie has always had this cocky persona that she is the most beautiful woman and all the men want her. So you have literally a couple that you could debate which one is the more gorgeous person. They fit almost perfectly. You could just picture it like an elite couple. And that's why I think this fits perfectly. Angel, you know, if you remember my original idea, I wanted it to be a satire of Shallow Hal. I think it was Shallow Al or Shallow Hal. I don't remember the movie. My mother loves that movie. She's watched it like 50 times. I don't know why. But that movie, you know, the guy thinks that she's this beautiful woman and she's like this. So I always thought, wouldn't that be an interesting storyline if Angel Garza sees something beautiful in someone who's like this? The problem is, who fits that role? And I don't want to say Nia Jax is like this, but I don't know. I mean, I would think Nia Jax would probably just swat his advances away. So I think Angel Garza and Eva Marie, I think it would be good. And you know what? You bring in Eva Marie the right way. We'll see where it goes. We'll see if it ends up being her. Who knows? It could be someone else that we're not even thinking about. I don't think it's going to be Charlotte Flair. I think it would look weird. Nothing against Charlotte Flair and Angel Garza, but I think there's a little bit of a height difference, unless I'm wrong. And I just see, like, I don't think it would look right if Angel Garza is looking at Charlotte like this, you know? So I personally think if you have to do this storyline and pair Angel Garza with a woman, I think Eva Marie fits the bill. So with that said, everybody, I'm out of here. We're right at the 2-hour mark. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Now remember, Monday, I'll be doing the Q&A that you all posted questions for. If you did not post a question yet, you want to. What I will do, actually, by the magic of technology, if you go back to this episode in a few minutes and look at the 2-hour and 3-minute mark, when I go like this, you'll see a link on the top that says Q&A. Just hit that and post your questions. I'll answer them Monday. And then Mish and I will also be here Monday night after Raw with Breakfast Soup Raw. And then Tuesday, you got Patreon. We'll be doing that. And then we get back to the normal routine. So everyone, I really appreciate it. Thank you as always for the support. Before you go, as I say always, if you enjoyed the show, I'd appreciate it if you hit that like button. If you're not subscribed to my channel yet, please do. This way, you know, you'll be informed whenever we post videos and clips. And trust me, you're going to start seeing some things that Mish and I are planning in the background. We got a couple of things brewing. It's going to, not going to lie, most of it's going to start in January, but we are going to throw a couple of surprises here and there beforehand. So see what kind of reception it gets and see what kind of feedback. But a lot of exciting things on the horizon. And very, very happy. Very looking forward to it. And I thank you, as always, for the support. Much love. And don't forget, you have you are welcome. You know, you have plenty of time to take part. Just go to the Wednesday episode. The instructions are on the video. And if you've participated before, you already know the instructions. So somebody will win that the 23rd of December. So I got some massive cotton mouth tonight. I don't know if anybody's noticed it, but I got some cotton mouth. I don't know why. But I'm going to get out of here. See, I'm a little concerned because when I get cotton mouth like this, like really bad, that means I'm getting sick. Even though I feel good right now, but tomorrow might be a cow. So, Captain Lou, much love, you slob. Everyone, I'll talk to you soon. Post your comments in the chat section. I'll return everybody's comments. And that's pretty much it. So, everyone be well. Much love. I'll catch you all again Monday for the Q&A, and Monday for Breakfast Soup Raw. Good night, everybody. Happy holidays. Be safe. And yeah, I heard that. God bless, everybody. Take care. Ciao.